Podcasting 2.0 for December 21st, 2020, episode 17. We're popping to Bean. Hey, you know.
What did you say?
All will become clear. Wait, I haven't introduced you yet. All will become clear with what I meant by that. It is, it's Christmas, I guess. Yeah, like we're really doing this on Christmas Day. You know we are. I'm Adam Curry here in Austin, Texas, and now may I introduce to you the man who takes people so seriously he wrote the person tag for the namespace, Mr. Humanity himself, Dave Jones.
Merry Christmas, my friend.
Yes. I've come totally prepared today.
Oh, wow. It's so festive. That's so wonderful.
Yes.
It makes me happy.
This is our little Christmas surprise to everybody who's worked so hard. Hi, guys. Everyone who's worked so hard these past few months on Podcasting 2.0. This is our gift to you, a little Christmas. You know, all the gifts have been open. Your uncle's falling asleep on the couch. And so now you want to just slide off and listen to something
fun. Your aunt has COVID. Sorry.
What the hell? Who's uplifting now?
Sorry. I did get you something. Actually, I got you two things.
You did? Oh.
I did. I made them myself.
Okay.
They're homemade.
What are they?
One is the person tag.
Yeah, thank you.
The other one is the season tag.
Oh, no. I didn't even know about the season tag.
You're welcome.
Merry Christmas, everybody. No, I read it. I read the person tag, and I think it's fantastic.
The gate to happiness is self-compassion. That's what my tea bag said. I just made a cup of tea, and that's what it says on it.
It's so true. Wow. Yeah.
What's going on this Christmas for you? Y'all got family, or y'all going to do anything?
Just my stepdaughter, Elise. She's over. So it's the three of us. My daughter's in Rotterdam. My other stepdaughter's in Chicago, and it's Tina and I, and then and all the family is in either Indiana or Chicago, or as I said, in Rotterdam. So it's just the two of us, and then the stepdaughter is moving to New York in January, and I don't think I can wait any longer for grandchildren, so I'll probably get a dog. Complete it.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Well, at least you can control the mess. Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
And the financial mess is kind of a known factor.
No, moving to New York in January, that's a tough call, man.
How about moving to New York during a COVID lockdown? I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, this did not go without some interesting conversation.
I bet. Yeah.
For those of you who would like to catch up on everything that's happening here at Podcasting 2.0, we have a cool web forward, newpodcastapps.com. It takes you to podcastindex.org. The apps page, and if you want to see any of this stuff that we talk about on the show in action, that's the place to find it. The hosters, all the categories of everything that has been built. And I wish I could have gotten two things this past week. No one picked up my Podcasting 2.0 certification tag that I wanted.
We got a badge. We got a badge from.
I didn't see the badge.
No. This is not for us. This is from us. We got a badge from Podcast Taxonomy.
We got a badge on their website. Yeah, we did.
We can put this on our website.
Yes, that links back to
official.
Them. Yeah. You better put that in React.js and make that happen.
Totally came in. What do you call that? We like subverted that whole thing because they've been working on this taxonomy thing for months and months. And then
we didn't subvert it. We just gave it a home.
Well, true. I mean, we came home. In like three, like 2 months ago, and it's like, oh, Podcast, you're an equal partner, and all thanks for your help. It's like, you know, there's been people working on this thing for years, and we just show up like a bunch of
cowboys, podcast cowboys. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way I think we're viewed By the way, when I see my podcast 2.0 certification logo, I want something that people can put on their app that says podcasting 2.0 certified, like a stamp.
It's like when it set the my keyboard. I don't know if you can hear this.
Yeah, we can hear it. Yeah,
that's a it's a really old mechanical keyboard from like the early 90s.
Mm-hmm. With the deep key travel.
Oh yeah, yeah. Nice. And it's got, if you flip it over on the bottom, it's got a big sticker on it that says it's Novell NetWare tested and approved. Oh.
And it has the color of what hearing aids used to look like. The geriatric gray or brown. Is that, the color?
Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. It's pretty much.
Man, that's.
Yeah, we need that badge. We need to,
we need the badge.
Slap it on there.
We need the badge. But as we were kind of viewed as cowboys, and I think you might have had a chance to listen to it. The most recent episode of the Todd and Rob show, the new media show. Holy moly.
I haven't heard. I was finishing the previous one. I haven't even heard that one yet.
Oh, my God. The whole show is about us. The whole show. Wow. About how fabulous we are.
I like those guys a lot.
Well, there's a number. No, the title of the show is the Podcast Index Gathers Steam or something like that. And it's all about how we came in and we just said, F it, and we're going to go for it. And the stuff that they, I mean, no, of course, it's true. These are all tags that they've worked on for a decade. I don't think we came up with anything. Well, the value tag is new and specific to us, but there's been ideas like this for a long time. And I think they both realized that, oh, wait a minute. When you come in as an independent party and you just say, fuck it, we're going to go, then you can actually get it done. And they recognize that we have Buzzsprout to the degree that, now I knew this last Friday, I wanted to clear it with Rob first before we mentioned it, but he mentioned it on the new media show. Libsyn, Libsyn is going to support the podcast 2.0 tags. I mean,
I got a Christmas present. Christmas present to me.
I mean, now we're cooking with gas, as you would say.
Yeah,
this is fantastic. I mean, so now we can really push stuff ahead. And they were talking. By the way, Podbean will be next.
You're coming to the dark side, Podbean.
Podbean will be next. Yep. We're bringing you in, Podbean. And what a power we'll have as a force, man. Everyone will love these tags. Mm-hmm. And they'll be there for anybody to use. And you watch, Apple's going to have to adopt at least some of them. I mean, the season tag, that's our gift to them. Their customer, NPR, wants that. That's a gift.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're a happy bunch of fuckers.
I put that in there. Yeah, I put that in there today, and I mean, it was low hanging fruit. So we finalized that thing, and Merry Christmas, NPR. It's just gifts going around all over the place.
It's the season, man. It's the time. It's the time for giving. That's beautiful,
man. I can't believe I'll have to listen to that. I have not finished the previous one yet.
It was a real good insight into how we've been viewed from the outside, which I'm sure that. I never really stopped to think about it, but I'm sure that there were plenty of people going, well, why don't we just wait until they go away? Because we've seen shit like this start before. let's wait until those guys give up, and then we can move on and not have to worry about it. And,
which is completely understandable.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I did the same thing.
Yeah. Well, of course. It's like a Kickstarter. You know, you get burned a couple times. Like, I'll wait. Let me see you ship something first. And then I'll buy on the open market.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that basically was our first board meeting was, F it, let's do it.
Yeah. No, yeah. Without a doubt, this has been a fly by the seat of the pants operation, but it's not that we don't mention Eric the Shill enough. I don't know if he wants us to use his last name.
Oh, I don't know.
I'll have to ask him. So Eric's a partner at Podcast Index.
We should use his Bitcoin Lightning node address.
Just read that and say, this is who this guy is. Yeah. Exactly. You know, we just said, screw it. Let's just do this. And we do have experience in our individual areas. And, you know, it's more of like an A-team situation where we just bring together some good talent, and we all fit in the van, and we're good to go.
I'll fit in the van.
As long as you fit in the van.
But who am I? Who am I? I mean, am I like, okay, you're obviously Mr. T. No, no. Yeah, I mean, like, no,
wait a minute. I'm Face. At least I'm Face, and I might be Hannibal. Maybe I have two. Maybe I have Hannibal. Two roles.
Yeah, you're Hannibal.
But I think you would be more. Oh my God, Murdoch!
The crazy mechanic guy. Yeah,
that's you, Dave.
Insane guy. Yeah. Thanks, man.
But at least we don't have to figure out who would be Ginger and who would be Marianne. Ginger. So on this special Christmas episode, let me cue up the sleigh bells again. We have a guest. And this is so we have your best interests at heart. We're just going to chat a little bit, and of course we'll have tons of news in the new year or the next show. Our guest today, I feel, deserves a lot more credit than he's received for the success of podcasting 2.0. Not only is the editor of Pod News, he's the host of Podland, which is, I quote, a podcast about podcasting. I read him every day, and since he launched Podland, I listen to him every day. Dave, I think you do the same. He's kind of presents the daily Bible for the industry, also known as the podcasting space. Ladies and gentlemen, from down under, where it's tomorrow, James Critland.
Thank you so much.
James.
Very kind of you.
Yeah. That was weaker than my intro, James.
What do you mean? I worked on that. I wrote that shit down.
No,
his comeback.
Comeback. Yeah,
well, come on, you guys are nerds. I know what to expect from y'all.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
What do you do?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, anyway, it's good to be on. Thank you.
Yeah, and James, thank you, because you jumped into Podcast Index, the project, very soon. I think you immediately recognized what we were attempting to do. You come with your own credibility, but also you have an interesting role where, on one hand, you're you run a business which is delivering the latest news, information, and analysis on podcasting as a whole. On the other hand, you also contribute to, in no small way, I mean, to namespace descriptions and definitions. There's a lot of, I would say, technical policy that you're involved in. What do you consider yourself? Because this is, I think it's, any journalist would say, well, he can't be a journalist if he's working on it, if he's working on the stuff himself. I'm doing my journalist voice here. It seems very comfortable to everybody, you know? And yeah, I mean, you're also taking money from the industry for your ads to keep it running, which to me is kind of another version of value for value. I mean, it's all within the ecosystem. So it's very much appreciated what you've done so far and what you do. And yeah, what you consider yourself is a big question.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's an interesting one. I guess I consider myself somebody who really enjoys podcasting, really enjoys the technical side as well as the creative side. And I guess one of the things that's fun is, you know, I'm a writer by trade. I learned to write radio commercials a long, long time ago. But I also do the tech stuff. So I've worked for a bunch of radio broadcasters, actually, and done a lot of the coding behind the scenes. So there's a good sort of mix there of things that I can hopefully bring. And I think one of the things that excited me about the Podcast Index was just being able to see there being a group of people that wanted the best for the industry and wasn't there just to sell their own company and to, you know, and to just sort of, you know, hide away behind that sort of thing. So actually just wanting the best, wanting to move on, wanting to innovate was something that I felt, wow, this is really cool. And if people get behind this, then that should be a fantastic thing. The fact that you now have 100,000 podcasts, which is using some aspect of the Podcast Index namespace, is just really good news.
Yeah, that I think so. I was looking in the database, and you are the ninth person to sign up for a developer account. So that's out of almost 1,000 accounts. So the first eight of which are different versions of me. So you're almost literally the very first person to sign up for a developer account. And it was before you started using it, before we even did our Squishy launch. I mean, like, you were using it like a week before anybody even knew it existed.
Yeah, I think he has he has keys before I did.
He did. And so I was like, so you emailed me like a couple of days before, and I was doing some work on the stuff and had stuff down. You're like, hey, man, your stuff's down. Hey, I hope you know that. And, you know, I mean, like, you were actually troubleshooting before we even went live with this thing. So, yeah, you were definitely in. You
know, I break things, unfortunately.
I know what I call you. I know what I call you. You're the Dick Clark of podcasting. Because, like, somehow you're like, you were doing radio in the 80s. And you're still, and you're doing podcasting today, but you don't look like you're a day over 40.
Yeah. America's teenager. Kind
of that's kind of it. I mean, I was doing radio in the 80s, yes, but in the very late 1980s.
So,
you're right. No, it's been really fun. And I think, you know, what's been lovely is seeing, you know, seeing the things that makes some of radio really good. Also working in the podcasting sphere as well, of just that, you know, that relationship that you can have with your audience, the relationship that you can have with, you know, a random stranger talking into your ears. That's a fantastic thing. And there's a lot of things that go together with that, and a lot of things which are, you know, which some people find really weird. Some people look at radio and go, but they're the baddies, aren't they? They're the gatekeepers, and we don't want to be involved with those. Well, you know, actually, I think that there's a lot of shared experience there, which we can all use in podcasting and in radio as well.
People always say, hey, man, how did you learn how to make it sound so good? And I say, 40 years of practice.
Exactly.
Which is really what it is. It's 40 years of practice. I can publish all my settings.
All of the, you can buy all of the equipment that you want, but actually you do also need to have that skill to learn how to do things, to learn how to use a microphone, to use how to use a compressor and all of that kind of stuff. There's a lot of skill, which isn't just going out and buying a new gadget, a new cloud lifter or a new, you know, USB interface.
On the other hand, what is, and I think I've said this before, what always has enamored me is kind of the unprofessional, crappy sounding stuff too, that it doesn't really bother me. If it's something if the content's there, it kind of adds to it sometimes for me. And I see it more as a whole, you know, I'm very much theater of the mind. So if I'm here in your boomy room, I'm going to build a mindscape around that and I'll get used to it. Now, it may not be in my preferred way and it's not going to be the best for walking the dog because I'm going to have a difficult time hearing you perhaps. But I kind of like all the differences that are out there.
It's kind of like the Blair Witch Project of, you know, of podcasting.
Sure.
Sometimes.
Exactly. Exactly.
I completely agree with that, and I think that there's a lot of over polish sometimes.
You mean stuff like this?
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Wow, that's fantastic. So I mean, you know, all of that polish is lovely and fine and works in a lot of different places, but also, you know, it is actually quite nice to hear real people. And I think that's one of the difficulties of some of the podcasts that you hear, and certainly some of the radio that you hear right now, is that they've taken the humanity out of it, and it's just something which is so totally polished and professional, and, you know, there's no real human connection there anymore. And I think that's a big mistake.
I agree so much. I also come from radio, as you know, and pretty much the interactive gateway we had was the phone line, which was typically utilized for maybe trolling for a date on a Friday night if you're doing a later shift, or, hey, everybody, call 100, what's your name? It's Shaniqua. Hey, Shaniqua, you just won $100. What's your favorite radio station? You know, that's the kind of stuff that was the interactivity. Or, and this part I think does carry over very well, live shows, live remote broadcasts, that carries over very well in podcasting. Surprisingly well, actually, if you look at PodSave, was it Pod Save the Country? What is the
Pod Save America?
Pod Save America. Yeah, thank yeah. you. I too many pod words. Pod Save America, who went on tour and did their show on stage. I mean, and got people to buy tickets to come in. I mean, these are things that were not possible before. And the real beauty of this, which is if you look at the genesis of podcasting, we just bought all this time. That's what we have. We have all this time, and it's our time to create it. And it's the consumption side, the reception side is your time to place it into your life. That's why it wins.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And just the connection with the audience as well is the really big thing here. I mean, I remember, so I when I was on the radio a long time ago, we got a fax machine. Adam, this was the most exciting thing.
Yep.
This was the most exciting
people
thing.
People faxing their the day, hand and stuff.
Yeah,
and their
yeah, yeah, cool stuff. Yeah, not just their hands. Yeah, no, yeah. It was that was fantastic fun. And just like giving people the tools to communicate and to make the thing that you are working on better. And that's where I see quite a lot of the parallels in between what was going on there with, you know, people sending voice messages and sometimes emails into the studio and people sending faxes in. And now you're doing with chapters, with community-driven chapters and stuff like that, all of that stuff is very, very similar.
Did you ever get your Sphinx app running for the podcasting 2.0 stuff with the lightning payments?
I haven't got my Sphinx app working yet. No.
You call yourself a newsman? Shame on you.
I'm sorry. One of the things that I have real difficulty understanding is this whole cryptocurrency and all of that. I understand how the blockchain works, but everything else just confuses my little head. So yeah, I'm waiting for somebody to write it down.
No. That's incorrect. What you need is an app that will be clear from day one and you understand what's happening and no manual should be necessary. The reason I bring it up is that experience, I think, is a version of the future of podcasting, where each podcast has its own little area, and that area built right into the player is a chat room. And the beauty of it is that you can hit a boost button, which is the equivalent of a like or tapping hearts on a Periscope video or Instagram Live, but that is sending extra satoshis, extra money, and the podcaster can see at what point that was done so they know where the extra kudos, attaboys, etc. is coming in from. But really the interaction in the chat room by itself is phenomenal, and it's my dream, as you may have heard, is to have these types of features work inter-app. And so and that's why I'm so excited about possibilities of using Lightning specifically. But even if that doesn't happen, you know, we've already looked at a whole bunch of different things of doing that. And it's just the creativity of the group, man. That's what's driving it all forward. Yeah. And you're a big part of it.
No, well, thank you. But no, I mean, you know, I used to say, so I worked at the BBC for 2 years, and I got into awful trouble one day because I said that my programmers, my software developers, were just as creative as some of the people in the programming team. You know, I'm working for radio and for TV, and I was taken aside and told that was the most ridiculous thing that anybody could possibly have said. Wait. I still believe it right now.
Was this in the days of the Dutch guy who was running the iPlayer?
Well, funnily enough, it was Eric, who was a lovely, lovely guy. Yes.
Are you just sucking up to him now, or do you mean that?
No.
Because I know him really well. I know him extremely well. And I always give him crap about everything. He was the CEO of Blockbuster. Did you know? Before he went to Philips.
I did not know that.
Yeah, before he went to the BBC. He was, he took a job. He was working for, I think he was working for Microsoft first in the Netherlands. Then he was working in Silicon Valley. And then
working for Windows Media Player. That's right.
Right. And then he wound up taking a gig to try and turn around Blockbuster Video as Netflix was already a thing. and from there he jumped. Yeah. Eric Huggers is his last name. Beautiful guy. Yes. I should reach out to him.
Oh, he's great. He's great. He joined the BBC at the same time as I joined. And so therefore it was all Eric Huggers, who we called him Huggers, Eric Huggers, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. Here's a photograph of Eric Huggers. And then right at the bottom of this press release was, oh, and James Cridland's also joined. Oh, thanks. Yeah. Thanks so much for that. That's really kind. Now, Eric was a great guy, and so he did a lot of unblocking of things like the iPlayer to get that working.
He said it was a really hard time. He said the politics were crazy.
Oh, the politics was just insane. And so Eric was kind of my boss, but not my boss. And in typical BBC fashion, I had two bosses, and one of them has a dotted line, and one of them didn't have a dotted line. And then there was another with a wavy line, and, and all of that going on. But it was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Can you explain,
working with Eric was fantastic.
Can you explain the dotted line?
Oh, so I think so. I had a manager who would be my boss, who I would go and ask things like, can I have next Monday off, please? And then I had another manager who would be in charge of telling me what it is that I should be doing.
I had another manager,
uh-huh, by the way, who was also in charge of telling me what it is that I should be doing. And neither of those two people agreed with one another.
Yeah, when we started this project, we're like, we pretty much just want to have three separate Bitcoin accounts, and you can just deposit it directly, and we don't really want to be a company.
Yeah.
And maybe we can get people to jump in and just help out.
You said something in a previous podcast that I thought was absolutely right, when you turned around and you said, we're not funded for politics. We can't afford politics.
Right.
And I thought that was a really good way of putting it, that actually you're just going ahead and doing things and making them work. And I think it's really interesting. You're talking about Todd and Rob's new media show earlier on. They have been talking for a long, long time about, we need to be working on new tags, and all that we need is basically a couple of hours of meetings a month, and then we'll be able to, after 6 months, we might have some ideas of, where we should be going forward. And I was there going, no, just go ahead and do it.
Well, actually,
you don't need the meetings.
Our process was the same way, except we just decided to turn the meetings into a podcast. It seemed a little more effective.
And
do it more often.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, speaking of industry and players and movers and shakers, I heard on that, I think it was for me today or yesterday's episode of Podland, that Liz Gately from Spotify is rumored to be leaving.
Yeah, apparently so. So
what's the deal there, man? Yeah, so, what's happening?
So this was in Pod News yesterday. So she was the original person that was supposed to be sorting out Spotify's podcast development and everything else. And so says Bloomberg, she's going to leave the company. But it looks as if what's basically happened is you've now got, The Ringer in there. You've got, you've obviously got Joe Rogan, but you've got Gimlet, you've got Parcast, you've got all of these other companies who are now part of Spotify. And so really, they don't necessarily need somebody to oversee all of that because they've got some really good people there. So maybe, maybe if the story is true, maybe that, frankly, there's nothing for Liz to actually do anymore.
What kind of patriarchy is that? That's not a good system. This is a company. It's not a love fest.
That said, if you look at Nick Kwar's Hot Pod, he was saying yesterday that this has come as a surprise to quite a few people who've been working with her. Because she was really involved, and so it just seems a little bit odd.
But whose task is it, James, to bring it all together? Who is in charge of that there?
maybe that is Dawn Ostroff, who's the Spotify Chief Content Officer.
Woohoo! Look out.
And maybe that's her. Mm. I mean, maybe there are just, you know, too many people at the top, and that was the basic thing. But, you know, I mean, the story from Bloomberg that broke this yesterday was talking a lot about, you know, just the growing pains of how Spotify is actually dealing with all of this. And, you know, I mean, obviously Spotify is now having to deal with Joe Rogan and all of the issues around that. But there's also, you know,
I think that is the issue. I think that is the issue, James.
Not the cancel stuff.
I think they're having trouble converting a lot of people to being, they may be Spotify customers, but converting them to becoming Spotify podcast customers.
Absurd number that they listed of like 100 million podcast listeners on Spotify or something like that. And I thought, they have to be counting every single person who accidentally clicked on a podcast in the UI. I mean, that can't be right.
I mean, what they've said in their financial reports, I think, is that 22%, I think the figure is now, 22% of Spotify users listen to podcasts.
Hold on.
In Spotify?
They may listen to podcasts, but do they listen to them in Spotify?
In Spotify. Yeah. Okay. Spotify.
And that's what I'm saying is it because... So here's how you, the first thing that I think of, you could juice those numbers by, when you autoplay after your album finishes, you just throw a podcast episode in there so that it rolls over to a podcast episode instead of the next album. And then you got a new listener that you can count in your quarterly results. That sounds fine to me.
Yeah. I'm skeptical about the 100 million. I'm skeptical.
You could be true, but having said that, that figure, only grew by 1% over the last quarter.
There you go.
And that's a quarter which includes Joe Rogan joining. Right. So from my point of view, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, that's great. Mm. So it's 22% of them used podcasts. They now have 320 million monthly active users.
Globally.
22% of those used podcasts, which is up 1% from the previous quarter. That does not seem to me like a hockey growth, hockey stick of
growth. That's no podcast index, my friend.
Particularly when you've got the Joe Rogan Experience joining Spotify during that quarter. That, to me, I don't know. I'm not entirely convinced that that's going in the right direction.
Let me say this, though. I've got something that bugs me is the difference between an original and an exclusive. Those terms are used way too interchangeably.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so you don't ever know, okay, is this just when they list it as an original, but then you can't find it anywhere else in any open system. So it's like, oh, it's also an exclusive. But then I want to bring this up, which is No Agenda is listed on Audible in their index. Did you know that, Adam?
No, I never submitted it.
Well, you know, the thing that I was looking at with Audible this morning is they have all these original, half dozen or so original what they call podcasts, which are not podcasts, that are not outside their ecosystem. And just like the Spotify stuff, they're overproduced, just like y'all were talking about earlier.
And they're
boring. Like I can understand why they want to go out and buy existing content, because the stuff that's produced as an audio story format is or an interview show like the Brené Brown stuff or the Michelle Obama stuff. You can't. It is just. It's boring to the people who love those people. You can have the biggest Brené Brown fan in the world, and they probably can't sit through that. It's just not. There's something about the scripted nature of it.
Well, there's also, you can be Brené Brown all you want, and you may write great books and have a tremendous following. It doesn't necessarily mean you're an entertaining podcaster. It's true. That's people seem to forget that. I remember blogs. Yeah, I'm blogging. Okay, well, we can toss out 99% of it because it's all crap. And then there's a piece that sticks and people like, and there's always going to be, and everyone should have a blog. That's fine. It doesn't mean that it'll be a commercially profitable venture. As we know, 95% of most podcasts don't even care about that. Don't even care.
Yeah. Do you think Spotify is bringing in a radio mindset to it, or do you think they're coming at it from a more of a television?
No, mindset? I think, well, I really don't know. And maybe James can jump in here, but they've got production teams. Look, if you listen to my shows, I produce 4. They sound similar. Now, they're different in content, but the production is going to be very similar. Now, if you have the same producers, because remember, these podcast companies now, they have producers and line producers, and they've built an infrastructure, which is kind of counterintuitive to the beauty of podcasting. If you can figure out how to do it yourself, you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
And then you get people whose job it is to, okay, I'm going to produce an interview show. I got segment 1 here, segment 2 there. I mean, we don't do any of that here. Do we?
No. Well, you started the show with some jingle bells. Does that count?
That's production. Yes, baby. That's production. Exactly.
What do you think about that, James? Do you think that from... y'all were talking about radio history and that kind of stuff before.
I mean,
I had seen somebody, I forgot what it was. You linked to like a seminar or something that you were a part of, and maybe Sam Sethi was a part of it as well. But you linked to it at one point, and you said, and I think one of y'all said that radio and podcasting are different, and you shouldn't think of them the same. Can you flesh that out, or do you think that, or do you think they're more similar than different?
Oh, I mean, I think that there's a lot of similarity and there's a lot of differences. And I think, I come at this as a Brit that now lives in Australia. And one of the things that I notice a lot is that there is a definite sound that NPR has. And it's the sound where everybody talks a bit like this. And it's all very careful and close to the microphone. And here's some random jazz. Mm-hmm. And that's lovely, but there's a definite sound to what NPR does. There's also a definite sound to what Gimlet does.
Yeah, I agree.
Gimlet is a great podcast company, makes great shows. Reply All is a fantastic show, which is not a radio show. It's a podcasting, podcasting first type of show, which works fantastically well. But there are other people who have come at this from radio and have taken a very, radio sort of thinking of how you make a show and how you format a show and everything else, and tried to translate that into podcasting without necessarily having to listen to a lot of podcasts. And maybe that's the big difference there. And I think, I've heard you, Dave, playing clips of some of the shows that are on Spotify from some of these big stars. And they're certainly not the sort of shows that I would want to have a listen to. That said, I'm sure that they have an audience, because otherwise they wouldn't have spent all of the money on them. I also, by the way, wouldn't listen to Joe Rogan. Have and never will.
It's interesting. When I hear you two discuss this, a thought popped to my mind. And this brings us back to what you said earlier, James. I think Joe Rogan had a great audience despite himself, because I know him. We're kind of friends.
Mm.
He's not a guy that interacts. He's not a guy that he'll post stuff on Instagram. He won't read it. He's very vocal about how he says it would drive me crazy. His audience, as far as I'm concerned, is in his YouTube comments, which were unceremoniously blown up with deletion of at least he left. I think he has 100 that he keeps on his YouTube channel. So he had that community despite what he was doing, and that community kind of got screwed over a little bit on where they could interact. And the stuff that podcasters inherently do, which at the basis comes down to email, but even the value for value model is a pure interactive feature where someone is sending us value, giving us something to read. And, you know, the fact that we're doing it is sending the value right back. A lot of people love that part alone. All of these things can only be done really without the restrictions of the commercial infrastructure.
Yeah, I think you're right to a point there. And I think, you know, some of the best radio shows that I've worked on have been shows that have been really interactive and have worked very hard. There's one thing saying, you know, oh, the lines are open now, cool. That's one thing. But you can also help educate your audience in terms of what you want from them. There's an amazing broadcaster in the UK, a guy called Jeff Lloyd, who used to be on the old Virgin Radio, used to be on Absolute Radio for a long time, has a podcast, has a number of different podcasts, and one of them is called Reasons to be Cheerful with Ed Miliband. And one of the things that he has done, and he's spoken about this at conferences and things, he doesn't want a lot of calls. He just wants great calls, calls that he can use on the air, calls that he can use on his podcast as being, you know, as being great content from his audience that he can then use to make a great show. And so I think quite a lot of radio people, quite a lot of podcasting people want the numbers. And, you know, they want loads of texts or loads of messages or loads of something.
Very good.
Actually,
point.
What you really want is you want the cream of the crop, and you want the other people that don't think that their story is good enough to not call, please. So you can actually get the really good stuff and
that's
make
a good
sure
point.
That really works.
Well, that's a very good point, because with Dvorak and I, we've never, ever looked at stats. You know, a cursory, like, I don't know. I know how many terabytes we push in data. The only thing we ever cared about is, can we pay the rent?
Yes. Yeah.
That's all that it was, and, which was not directly related to how many people were listening.
Yeah. Does he still get no spam, by the way?
Oh, my God. He gets almost no email. I mean, if you put the word shit in an email, you get porn blocked by him.
Oh, really?
He doesn't believe it. I keep telling him it. It's a long story. Is Reasons to be Cheerful, is that relating back to Ian Jury?
I believe it may be. Okay. Yes. Right. Reasons to be Cheerful. The other one is called Adrift, which is another great show that he does. Mm. But exactly.
Now, so on the other, I guess on the other side of... on the other side of that is just the, you know, the mission of the end. You know, we talk a lot about the, you know, pushing podcasting forward and that kind of thing. But on the last episode of Podland that I was listening to, y'all were asking about, you know, how we sort of anticipate having to deal with takedowns and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so how, you know, our free speech, you know, cause we always say that we want to be a platform for freedom of speech. And, you know, the thing that I've been thinking a lot about that actually since I heard that episode, because I'm like, you know what? I have a lot of stuff swirling in my head, but I haven't really stopped to think to put it into words. And it was actually a pretty good intellectual challenge to sit there and think about it. And, you know, we'll always deal with, comply with local law and those kinds of things. And, but on a broader sense, I think really from that standpoint, it's a situation where I think we live in a unique period right now with the vitriol of the 2016 through 2020 time period. And it has caused this extremism. I mean, it feels like there are hands in the middle just pushing each side to the extremes of right and left. And what has happened, I feel like, is this misinformation, disinformation, fact-checking. This stuff has popped up very recently. And so that scares me, because I see the debris that it leaves behind it. And really, that's what... that's what I feel like. There's a challenge to there's an opening out there for someone to step in the middle and say, okay, there's going to be a space or a place in the podcasting world where the fact checkers and the disinformation labels and those sorts of things, those are not here. Those can be downstream from us, but they don't reside here. It's a taking a non-editorial approach, so to speak. Because for instance, you know, I was reading the Glenn Greenwald article the other day about Instagram fact checking Joe Biden's crime record, and he lists out, he goes through there, and Instagram lists USA Today as showing that one of the posts was false about his crime record. But then he also lists out 8 other fact-checking organizations that list it as partially true or true. And so there's this strange sort of mix of fact-checking and political adherence and all this kind of stuff. And I think it's so new in this whole game, and it's so politicized that I don't trust it.
Fact-check false?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, like, an organization that I've listened to and followed and supported, actually, for a long time is antiwar.com, Antiwar Radio. And they have, you know, been all listed on various terrorism watch lists and all these disinformation. And it's, the whole thing is bogus. And that really set me off as thinking, you know, I don't trust who's fact-checking the fact-checker kind of thing. And the disinformation labels have become so highly politicized that I think there really does need to be a sort of unbiased directory level thing where any filtering can happen downstream from that.
The commercial nature of the internet is what is being used as a wedge for cancel culture. That's what people discovered. is you can pressure advertisers to have someone kicked off. And then at a certain point, you don't have to pressure advertisers. You just pressure the platform because, hey, you want this guy on? Then he's going to, your advertiser's not going to be happy. Look, I CC'd them. And from there, it went to, well, we might as well preemptively do something. And then, well, you can't really take it off. Let's put a label on it. The No Agenda show would last 17 seconds in a commercial environment. But because we're not in it, not for hosting, it's uninteresting. I mean, people talk crap about us, but there's no lever. It really does solve a lot of problems. It's like, if you want free speech, you got to get out of the advertising realm. Because advertising is censorship, bottom line. And James, I'm sure you would see. Yeah, I know you have to self-censor. You can't go tinkling in everybody's cornflakes in the industry.
Well, I think once you have enough advertisers, then I think you can actually be you can carry enough stories that sometimes aren't going to be particularly positive. I mean, heavens, you only need to go back and look at some of the things that I've uncovered about the way that Anchor works, you know, as one example, and Spotify is still you know, covering supporting the newsletter. I think where it gets more difficult is if you have 5 advertisers, so you can't afford to annoy any of those advertisers. Once you've got, you know, over 100 supporters, as I do, thankfully, then it does mean that I think you can be, tell the truth. Cover whatever it is that needs to be covered. And if you lose 1 out of 100 supporters, well, you lose 1 out of 100 supporters, and it'll be pretty obvious why they've gone. I think that there's a difference there in between. Yeah, absolutely. If you're only going to have 2 or 3 individual individual advertisers, then you need to be super, super polite to all of them. But I think you can probably go some way, you know, if you have more.
Now, you do your own direct sales. You don't deal with a network.
There's a fantastic lady called Christy that looks after all of that. But yes, it's all done for us. So yeah,
that's another weak link in the chain. Typically, is when you're dealing with programmatic ads with an ad network.
Oh yeah,
they're not going to want you. I'm like, oh, no, it's okay, man. Please, don't need you.
I was reading that the article, the Guardian article, was it the Sinister Sounds?
Yes.
Article? Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. Disinfo article.
Yeah, I was reading that and reading through it because we briefly touched on it at the end of last episode, and I was like, I really haven't gotten all the way through it, and so I dug in a little bit, and this comment stood out to me. It says, I'm talking about Alex Jones. I said, Jones, whose own show had been kicked off Spotify under its hate speech policy, was given space to broadcast a stream of consciousness about everything from climate change to vaccines with minimal fact-checking. And when I read that, I thought it immediately the person who came to mind was Art Bell. Ah. I thought, that's exactly what he did. And he made a 35-year career out of it on radio. And nobody fact-checked him when he said that when one of his guests that he was interviewing got abducted by, by Sasquatch in the Appalachian forest and forced to procreate with their women. Like that was actually an episode that I heard one time. And so he made an actual career out of that. But I think we have become so sensitive now that it is extremely difficult for somebody to operate in the middle. It's like what's happened is everybody's been pushed to the right, and now now you have your conservative people over here who are bailing out of YouTube and creating their own video sites, and then you got the left over here that those people that are taking over Reddit and these other forums, and it's just like there's no middle ground.
Yeah,
anymore.
But Dave, I got to push back on that. What happens is these platforms like Rumble, they see who's coming over, and it's just like Fox News. Fox News see, okay, we got conservative people. We're going to cater to them. Rumble sees, hey, we've got all the conservative people who don't like Twitter. We're going to cater to them. So they just ramp that up. And as long as people want, as long as people are going to continue to ride on coattails of companies that provide these services until they figure it out, they're going to have, podcastindex.social I believe is one of the great contributing factors to the success of this project because it's a very familiar interface. People really, it has its quirks, but people in general understand it immediately, but we're not messing around with you. We're not continuously pushing stuff, popping up controversies. It's kind of, it's a timeline. It's like an actual timeline. You get, I've already read this one. I'm at the end. Go to the top. Refresh. No? All right, move on. But the interaction is very good. And there's people from all walks of life. So we had recently, I think, James, James, you're a guy who would easily post something like, well, since you clearly have no clue what you're talking about, I'm going to step back from this thread. I saw you with Brian of London. But it did. Yeah. What happened is nothing. It didn't escalate. It didn't elevate.
Which was interesting.
No algo. And, I don't even know if Brian answered you. Didn't show up for me. So no one was presenting me with the conflict. I didn't even feel like posting. I'm like, whatever. Yeah, fine. It'll be fine. Everyone will love each other in the end. It'll all be okay. We're all grown ups. So there's a big difference here. I think the platforms are rigged to do this. And
so I, I used to live in, as you know, Adam, I used to live in the UK, and I and in the UK, broadcast media, so TV and radio, is not allowed to be biased. It is it is illegal. Now you can laugh because of course it is, but there is a legal compunction for their license that they should not unduly be biased on one side. What that essentially means is that if you have a mad bloke on the breakfast show talking about, you know, the fact that climate change is nonsense and there's no such thing, and, you know, and it's all a conspiracy, then at least you have somebody else giving the other viewpoint.
Yeah, but they stopped doing that.
Kind of.
Yeah, but they stopped doing that.
Well, and then I then moved from the UK here to Australia, and I heard this guy called Alan Jones,
yes, of course,
who was on the breakfast show.
Yeah.
And he was there saying, you know, oh, this ridiculous climate change, it's all nonsense, it's all completely made up. And it's 8:30, and the news and travel is next. And I thought, wait a minute, where's the balance here?
Well, but be fair, in the UK, there's now directive to no longer let climate change deniers on the air at all. So it's gone the other direction.
I mean, I think climate change was a bad example that I gave, but I think any
it's normal, the best example. It's the example.
And the reason why I mentioned climate change is that was the easiest thing that I could actually think of.
But, vaccines. Do another one. Vaccines. Do it all.
Okay. I mean,
it's all there.
I mean, both vaccines and climate change. The scientific proof is overwhelming. So there isn't really a conversation in between. Is it happening or is it not happening? Yes, it's happening. It's obvious. It's happening. All the scientific proof says that it's happening. Therefore, it's happening. So there isn't actually a bias that needs to be gone into there. Where there is a bias that needs to be gone into is, you know, should all public transport be free? Should there be a minimum wage? Should there be, you know, all of that kind of stuff, which is less polarizing, of course, but all of that kind of stuff clearly has two sides to those arguments. There isn't two sides to a climate change argument, and there isn't two sides to a vaccination argument. But there clearly is.
The science is in! Science!
The interesting thing about that, though, is what is how do you deal with it? And I think that's where the issue comes in. Do you label it as disinformation, or do you ban it, or do you take it down? And I think Matt Taibbi's article dealt with that very well. He said, if you're concerned about something being disinformation, banning it is the quickest way to make people think that this is a cover up and that you're trying to suppress it. And so, like, I was reading, this has been a few days ago, and I was reading a CNN article, and it was actually from back in August. It said that 70% of the American population now agrees with same-sex marriage, and
I disagree. I doubt that's true.
I don't know if it's true or not, but the polling, it's definitely higher than 50.
Mm.
And so what I was thinking was, it immediately made me think back to 2008 when Barack Obama ran for his first term, and there was a controversy surrounding him where he was against same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the very beginning, he had this. There was a big sort of a big to-do.
Defense of Marriage Act.
Yeah, and he said, "Well, I know I've always been against same-sex marriage, but now I've changed my mind."
Yeah,
and so it made me sort of put a timeline together in my head, and I thought, you know, so here's over a 12-year period of time, we've gone from having our politicians openly denying same-sex marriage to where you could never get elected at all by denying same-sex marriage. And that progress, that social progress,
came from one thing.
It happened in the absence of disinformation labels and fact checkers and all these things. It happened with just an open debate where everybody got a chance to say their piece without being banned.
Yes, I hear you.
And the proper, correct decision was made by society.
So the accelerant was, of course, the internet, because that's what really accelerates all these things. Yeah. But I think you're very correct. At that time, man, I think Google Plus, I think, had launched around that time.
Ah, Google Plus.
And no, you're absolutely right. And so to bring it back around to Podcast Index, that's a hill I'm willing to die on. We are hosting an index of feeds. There's just no argument. The more people who can say stuff, the better. There's no other logic. We've seen it all. We've seen all every single model what doesn't work, and now we have something new. But the people still have to figure out that if you want to do this,
the difference there, Adam, comes into yes, of course, you're hosting an index of feeds. The difference is, do you put? If you have a discovery mechanism in your podcast app that Podcast Index runs, do you put something as a suggested podcast in front of someone that you know contains unsafe or racist or unpleasant?
Right. Well, that's up to the podcast app.
So I suppose the question is, but you know, I mean, it comes back to if you do a search, should the search that Podcast Index runs, should that search uncover, deeply racist and unpleasant material?
Yes, yes. The standard basic search should uncover everything. I believe so. We've discussed from day one. If you want the sanitized version, we're happy to put a check mark in front of everything that's in Apple's index, and you can just use that. That's fine by me. But you can't get down to, I want a sensitivity for this, a sensitivity for that, a sensitivity for A, B, and C. We can't do that. The apps can do that. Any app can be a completely family-friendly app, do whatever you like. And if we can help in any way providing an endpoint to you in that manner, I think we don't have a problem with it. But ultimately, it has to be available.
Well, so maybe the answer then is to have that, tick box of, is this in Apple? Because, if there's one thing that Apple has done a good job on, it's making sure that the stuff which is in the Apple Podcasts Index
is fun.
Well, has been humanly vetted, shall we say.
Well, now this is interesting because this is something that Dave noticed. Maybe one of our first shows, and I want you to pay attention to this snippet from 2006, I think it is, the D conference when Steve Jobs presented podcasting on stage. I'm not playing the whole thing, just a moment where I say something, I drop an F-bomb, and then listen to what Kara Swisher says on stage. This is the first podcast ever demonstrated in public.
Generation radio content in my ears.
We don't need no stinking transmitter.
I like to think I'm flying into the future.
Podcasting is Adam Curry.
That's right. It's show number 180, and it's Friday, everybody. Thank God.
The power of your influence.
I've actually had to restart the show three times. My Mac has been acting up like a motherfucker. I don't know what's going on. I think it's something to do with the file system.
Okay.
How do you control, say, dirty stuff? I mean,
we're going to have an explicit flag on these like we do the music, so you can...
And Dave, the first thing you said when you heard that was, isn't that typical? They go straight for the gatekeeping role. Straight for it.
Well, that's the thing that I always think of, and I forgot where I heard this first, but you never make policy based on the guy who is in office now. You make policy based on the guy who may be in office two or three guys down the line. And because the guy that's in there now, he may be your guy. He may believe like you do, and then you may be on his team and that sort of thing. But things change over time. And the guy, too, you don't want to give too much power to the office right now because the guy two or three steps down the line, he may be a creep and he may be terrible. He may disagree with everything that you hold. And so I think it's the same way with, with making policies about disinformation labels and takedowns and that sort of thing is, you know, when it seems like the tide of society is moving in your direction, the direction that you agree with, the tendency is to get overzealous and say, okay, we're going to stamp out every alternative view. But then you got to think about once you put those tools in place, those same tools can easily be 20 years from now turned around and used for terrible things against yourself. And I think that, and if you're taking that example from about same-sex marriage, same thing can be said for most civil rights. Most of the civil rights that minorities and disenfranchised populations experience today weren't won because the opposing views were banned from being heard. They were won based on the merits of the argument. Mm. And you can't judge the merits of an argument unless you see how bad the other side is.
So you're basically saying there, Dave, is that you can have podcasts out there that are incredibly racist, anti-Semitic, threaten violence about other people. And A, that's great. And B, we should encourage that. And C, we should be putting those podcasts in front of other people.
That's where I stopped you. I'm not saying
make any sense whatsoever.
We have an index. We're not putting anything in front of anybody. We have an API. The thinking has to change, James, from a podcast app is this. Why isn't there a podcast app that is just for music? Why isn't there one that's just for racists? Anyone can make any app they want. Now, they may run into some different issues in their presentation of the content, but I have nothing to do with that. I feel the American dollar should come with a warning label. It doesn't, but a warning label. This is fake. This is not real money. This is a bunch of digits. So there's a lot of these things, but we're not serving anything to anybody. Well, that's not true. If you go to podcastindex.org and you search, you will eventually get whatever
looking for. If you're using the Podcast Index's API, then you're searching that.
You can filter it for whatever you want your customers to have.
So I guess that's
the hard job because actually filtering is a difficult thing. Then use Apple. Yeah.
Just use Overcast. Just use Overcast. It'll be fine. And look at the ground. It'll all go away. The evil anti-Semitic racist podcast that harmed you so much by seeing its album art and hearing the first 5 minutes, you might get over it.
There's no podcast apps that only show racist stuff because they would only have 5 customers. There's just not that much out there. There's not that many insane people out there to make that a viable market strategy.
But the point is that the things that I say in any of my shows offend lots of people.
Yeah.
Really offensive. And sometimes it's humorous. Sometimes it's taken the wrong way.
You've offended me a few times already on this show. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Back at you, baby.
the part of it that, but it's almost like you can't start. See, that's the issue is you can't start with the filtering and the takedowns because then you have to find a place to stop. The stopping point is way harder than the starting point because I guarantee you, I could go on to the Podcast Index right now and probably find 10 or 20
problematic podcasts
offend me to no end. And I would love to take them off, but I just can't click the button I'm like, okay, now I got to pick a stopping point.
And the same goes for, I've been running an experiment for 3 years, noagendasocial.com, a Mastodon, which has, I think, 14,000 people who are, they're not all active, but there's several thousand who are active.
and people report other people all the time. What he said is racist. You know, this is misogynistic. This is porn. This is spam. This is an ad. And I've never taken action on any of it. Ever. And it just goes away, and people don't care after 2 minutes. But if I start silencing, deleting, suspending, I have a whole extra job. I'm just not going to do it. And I get requests, like serious requests, like emails hammering on me. You've got to do something about this. Like we had a recent little fracas going on with on the podcast index.social. A little anger back and forth with a couple of people. There's no action going to be taken. No one's going to block anybody. Work it out.
Yeah, the two, there seems like there's kind of two separate categories there of thing of content that you deal with, and it's like, do you, dangerous content where you're talking about some, you know, somebody advocating violence, or and that would be handled by, you know, that's a legal issue, and you take stuff off if you got a podcast out there that's just, you know, saying, hey, go kill this guy. I mean, clearly that's an action item. But, you know, the thing that bothers, that one's to me is kind of sort of a no-brainer. I mean, you take stuff down because it's illegal. It's literally illegal. But the part that bothers me more is just the misinformation side of things, because there's, again, history is the guide here. And if we go back, you know, if we go back to weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, well, that was complete bullshit. You know, and you had the Secretary of State up there at the UN claiming a bunch of stuff that ended up not being true. Well, if some, you know, then you had the antiwar.com guys who were saying this is completely false.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they could have been easily, that was before social media,
labeled as disinformation and thrown off. No, not easily. Right. They would have been, without a doubt.
They would have been. Yeah,
but that's only because we feel that it's so important to do this on these particular systems.
I've got a better example. Here's a better example. 9/11 truthers. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first time I ever heard about 9/11 truth movement was watching the Loose Change documentary on Netflix.
Yeah. Oh, really?
It was on Netflix. They would never show that.
We had that on Google Video, man. Remember those days? Google Video.
And the thing is, like, the 9/11 truther movement is still just this tiny fraction of people. It's never. The danger of people seeing something and being influenced by it so much to the point of bad things happening is so small. And we've proven historically
The difficulty is that the algorithms that you have in things like YouTube and other places end up sort of ramping up the content that you see. So that they begin to put more and more, stuff in front of you, to the point where it begins to, it begins to amplify those views that you have.
The rabbit hole. It takes you down the rabbit hole.
It's just difficult. Yeah. Yeah. And so you've got that is, I think, where I'm coming from here is not that they appear. If you know what you're searching for, then you will find it. It's the, it's putting stuff in front of you. It's the algorithms and the tools that enable those particular algorithms. So that you do begin to see more, you know, outlandish stuff. And there's been lots of pieces of research around how the Google algorithm, how the YouTube algorithm works. And, people who watch this also watch this, and so on. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's where it gets difficult. And, you know, and it's interesting hearing you say, well, of course, if it's illegal, we'll take it down, because that then turns into it being legal versus illegal. Various rules about all kinds of things.
All right, so I'll give you the final word on this, James. But now I got to say a few things.
Oh, I'm looking forward to the final word.
Yeah, no, of course you're our guest.
We're solvers here.
I'm gonna slice you both down. Then I'm gonna toss it to you, James, so your bloody corpse can give the final word.
Go for it.
All right. First of all. The only thing that should be labeled on social media is the algorithms themselves, because what you just described is much more dangerous and had adverse effects on people's health and sanity and state of mind and personality and general life is the algorithms that social media use versus stumbling on a search where some KKK Nazi quadroon podcast pops up that you're probably not going to get sucked into Heil Hitler. But it was Dave who said, if it's something illegal, we'll take it off. You didn't hear me pipe in there because I would really have to, I'm willing to go to court depending on, our resources, because I'm not doing anything. I'm hosting an index. We're not telling anybody to go shoot anybody. That's an MP3 file. You can find it over there. You could listening to it on that platform. I have nothing to do with this. Go away from me. Secondly, I grew up in a military intelligence family. The simple good old days of news was one and all disinformation. Everybody on television today, half of them are ex-CIA FBI agents talking crap on the news. The disinformation is in the system that is telling you to shut up and is telling you that you can't talk that way because the official word is this. And you yourself did a version of it, James. Climate change is a settled case. There's nothing left to discuss. But that's not actually the discussion, is it now? The discussion is, and that's why it's so dangerous. The discussion has been moved from climate change, you're a climate denier, versus, well, let's take a look at what's really causing it, how we can really affect it, what these particular plans entail. None of that is discussed. It's just shut up. It's put under a big blanket and you can't talk anymore. And as long as people commit the narcissistic act of needing to have a large audience or thinking they have one, which you don't really, I think a lot of your followers are probably, I have a lot of bots for sure. And if you are able to go over to a different platform, such as the federated universe of sites or podcasting, I'm perfectly okay with us being where we are with 40% of the market. And I don't care if Apple supports the namespace. I really don't. There's going to be enough people who want to hear podcasts, any podcast, have access to it. They'll make their own decisions. And if an app is too dangerous for them because it shows them the full search results, they can either find one that doesn't or, shockingly, build one themselves. And that's where we need to move people. James Cridlin for the last word.
I certainly don't want to turn your views down at all, Adam. I'm sure that's true.
Wow, nice.
What on earth do I say here?
Whatever you want, James. I'm just unloading on you, man. You're just in the way.
Take my approach, James. I've never let lack of knowledge of a topic stop me from having completely unjustified strong opinions about that topic.
Ditto. Well, but I love that we can have this conversation. I'm not quite sure how we got here, but I think it's worth discussing.
Yeah, because, me too. I like it.
Because this really is what we're talking about here. What we're building here is a place where there's just a lot more flexibility, and it's really important
and let's just be really clear, by the way. The podcast index is a conversation around censorship or not censoring, or however you want to say this, right? The podcast namespace, nothing to do with that.
Right,
podcast namespace is all about making podcasting better for everybody, and it has nothing to do with content. It's all about adding additional features and everything else. So,
and that's why I didn't respond to Brian. Why I didn't respond to Brian of London's issue. I just left it alone. I'm like, this is probably just not the right place for this issue.
Yeah. So whether or not there's a conversation around taking illegal podcasts down, actually, what we really want is people like Apple to support the podcast namespace, because it's that will help innovate and move us forward. We should be working on that, so far as I'm concerned.
Well, I am presenting to the Apple podcast team in January the namespace.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is my belief they are working on podcasting, Podcast Plus, and they are working on... I mean, I said to them quite clearly, good luck with competing with Spotify. My recommendation is get on a different battlefield, brother. Come over here with the redcoats.
You know what I think that Apple Podcasts ought to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
They should be doing two things, really easy, straightforward for them. Number one is for them to turn on paid-for podcasts. Now, you or I might not want to do a paid-for podcast, but the benefit that Apple has is that they already have all of the tax and all of the payments and everything else set up because of their App Store. So they can very easily turn on, if you want to listen to this podcast, it's $1 an episode, or it's $1 for you to get, the next 10 shows or whatever it is. So they can easily do that. That would be number one. And number two would be an Android app. Because it turns out that 75% of phones in the world are Android apps. Mm. And the Android apps that we have, with a possible exception of Google Podcasts, are really not very good. And so it would be really helpful, I think, if Apple were to do an Android app. But the only reason that they would do an Android app is if they could earn some money out of it.
There's plenty of great Android apps. Why do we need that? Who needs that?
I mean, there are plenty of great Android apps, but everybody just wants to use... Everybody talks about Apple Podcasts as if it is podcasts.
Is that really the feeling you get? Because I had a nice chat with James Boggs. He reached out. Man. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, we talk once a year, maybe. And he checked in with me, and I told him that right after the Sphinx demo, and believe me, I think he's very interested in that. But the issue is micropayments. It's just the dollar and the system is not.
That's a hugely complicated thing.
That's not their customer. Look at what they've done with professional audio and video. They've given up professional. They've kind of given up on it. Let's come back with a $50,000 machine that you can do anything on. But meanwhile, all the high-end audio guys I know all moved to Windows a while ago. Mm. Many of them moving to Linux. There's not enough for me on Linux to do what I do in particular. But their customer is the person who has the phone. And podcasting was doing just fine without Apple. We had apps being created. I think it would be hard for Apple to catch up on podcast. This is like iTunes on Windows, it's like it never really caught on. It was a piece of crap, but you needed it for the iPhone. I just don't see the importance anymore of Apple and the industry, the hosting companies in particular. And this is the whole conversation that, Todd and Rob were having. Is they've basically been waiting for 10 years for Apple to do one thing. Just by starting, Apple is calling us. And I said, hey, man, here's what I know. I know that NPR, mm-hmm. who you featured from day one before you were at the company, instead of the independent podcast, which is okay. But, you went highbrow, high road with all the NPR, PBS-y stuff. which, you know, kudos to Tony Khan and everyone who worked on getting NPR in, but they can't get the season tag they want. We're creating it. So we're going to write this for them. We're putting it in the namespace, and we're going to have apps supporting it. And they have their own publishing system. They're going to support it. And they might be telling their listeners to go listen on Podfriend or Podverse or Podcast Addict or any of these different apps. So up to you. The pressure is going to come from their customers, not from podcast hosts and not even from me. But there's competition out there. And these web apps, they work great on Android. And they suck on the iPhone, but they work fantastic on Android. They really do. Yeah. Apple hates web apps. What a farce that is. So tell me what, I mean, is this, why is this still a thing? Why can't people get over this? Why does it always have to be Apple? We need Apple in, oh, Apple has to support it. I just don't see why anyone cares anymore.
I mean, I guess I'm one of the people who has been sort of driving against Apple for quite some time.
That's so very interesting
weird.
To me.
It's a bit weird playing the other side.
It's okay,
but you can certainly see that you know, the addition of Apple Podcasts to the Apple to the iPhone had a big effect on the amount of downloads, on the amount of people that knew what a podcast was. And it would be really helpful were that to be, you know, available on the Android side of it as well. I would also say,
what part? You know, James? What part do you want on the Android side? What is the important part? What is so different about that?
Because you have a bunch of podcasters, and they all don't know any better. But you have a bunch of podcasters all saying, "Listen to us on Apple Podcasts," to the point where Granny with her Android phone says, "Oh well, I can't listen to that because that's on the Apple thing."
Okay, so
I don't care. It really is.
You've got to go help your granny, or you're just a bad grandson, very bad grandson. B. Once we publish the payment API, where almost any podcast app can tie in Bitcoin Lightning payments. I'm jumping the gun, but I'm saying once we do that, podcasters are not going to say, go tell Granny to get the podcast app. They're going to say, go get this podcast app and then flash the QR code with this. They're going to push people towards apps that make the money.
Yeah, the podcasters will follow the money.
Oh, yeah. They'll follow it. Part of that. When I say you can make more money with 5,000 downloads, what you would call you can make more money with Lightning payments than you're going to get from any ads in your podcast, guaranteed.
I see this as the same, essentially the same thing that happened with Google Reader. I mean, RSS feeds were a huge thing at the time, you know, or were a fledgling technology, and then Google Reader came on the scene, and everybody thought, oh, well, this Google Reader is RSS. I mean, they thought it was the entire thing. And it was a horrible interface. The UI was terrible. It was a piece of garbage, really. And then as soon as Google Reader disappeared, you had a resurgence of new innovative apps like Feedbin and Feedly, and all, I mean, just like 10 of them popped up overnight, and some of them are so good now. And you got NetNewsWire came back. I mean, it's actually a thing again.
Yeah.
And so I see the problem with Apple Podcasts is when, and it's not just them; it's just a genre defining thing. Is when some big player comes in there and just plants the flag at the very beginning. It can really damage the market for long periods of time.
Well, Apple has no beef with me because they did us a huge favor. The beauty of RSS in general is it never went away. The readers went away, and the methodology of a timeline was adopted by the social networks. Twitter is, after all, at its core, a podcasting company. So the idea of subscribing to feeds with content was, you know, has always been there. And what we did not have at the time was an incentive, because we also didn't have app stores, an incentive for developers to build these experiences. And this is what I'm pushing for and what we've been trying to do. And I even heard Todd and Rob talk about, almost as if it was a crazy thing for someone to say, like, we have no relationship with the podcast apps. What is the fuck? We have no relationship with them. And I thought to myself, how sad, because you could. You could. Once you have value flowing that you can easily disperse back and forth, and micropayments, which has been a big thing people have talked about for 20 years, we actually have it working. When you have these micropayments, yeah, you're going to have a relationship with the app developers, because they're going to say, hey, you know what? Maybe you can get half off hosting if you kick in 1% goes back to your hosting company. Maybe you want to have the hosting company wants the app developer to highlight certain certain podcasts that are their customers. Mm-hmm. Maybe they should have their own app and make their own money on it. Once you put money into the equation, Apple doesn't make money on podcasts. Costs them a lot of dough to host it, to have the whole team there, but they sell devices. So what's been lacking is that infrastructure. And so
I agree.
And when you say, and this is what I would hope would not happen, because the inclination is to think if Apple made pay podcast, it would be very disappointing to me, because I know that they would say, all right, here's $1.99 an episode, you know, yes. where and the whole premise
would walk away with 30%.
Well, besides that, the whole premise of value for value is, what is it worth to you? Make it make it open ended, make it variable from day to day, make it variable from minute to minute. Oh, I'm liking it a little bit more. It's more value to me. This is the conversation that's changing, and what we're doing here today, we're going to do it for music. We're going to use a similar infrastructure. I'm telling you, Dave, right now, cancel the next 10 years of your life. I have plans.
All right, wait. Now, let me do that. Let me pull my calendar.
We're going to we can do it for music. We have a built-in royalty system that has never existed before this anywhere that can actually function in real time with any type of content source. The only hook is that it's based on value for value and not on set pricing. And it's, and therefore it's also voluntary, because you can assign value zero, but then what are you doing with your time? So this is my dream of the future. And without people like you, James Cridland, we're not going to be able to communicate it. So what can I do to suck up to you even more?
You get everybody
now that you thoroughly understand Lightning. Go write an article about it, James.
When I do thoroughly understand Lightning, I certainly will.
But yes. I really want
to doing that,
James. I really want to set you up with that. I will make it my personal mission to see that you have experienced this, because once you do. And once you put, because I want you to put Podland on there,
it'll blow your mind.
And you see this, it's micropayments, but it's coming in every minute. Like, oh my God, it just makes you happy. And all you know, all you know is you just got to get a multiplier. So either I have to get more people listening or get them listening longer. It's one of two things.
I can see that. And I think one of the things that, you know, is really needed in this space is to make it really simple. And the fact that you have to sign up, the fact that you have to buy some Bitcoin, the fact that you have to then do something weird with Satoshi.
We're going to solve all that.
And then you need this app, and then you need this weird code, and then you need it's just the world's most complicated thing. But I think,
You're making it sound terrible.
Yeah, you know, James, when we first started podcasting, people had to click on this button, this big page of code came up, you had to copy the link, go over to your app, paste it in there. Oh crap, I left on download all episodes at once, now I have no internet. Granny is crying.
I agree.
James, I
remember fiddling around with, you know, iPodder back in late 2004, early 2005.
Sure.
And that was not anywhere near as simple as, you know, Pocket Casts is or anything else. So, absolutely. And it's that's actually needed here in terms of the micropayment stuff, in terms of just keeping things simple.
Yeah.
What do you think about the stats?
That's when the stats GUID tag.
And what do you think about that? Sticking that on the end of the download.
See, you're
the stick the parameter on the end of the download.
Hold on.
Let's
explain what we're talking about. Dave, set it up because people need to understand.
Okay. It's a way to differentiate in, excuse me. You call me off guard. It is a way to create a code that is completely anonymous that gets attached to the end of every download so that the CDN or the host can accurately differentiate individual users and individual listens in a way that is completely anonymous. That's the idea.
So as Podnews said yesterday, it's a GUID parameter. It goes on the end of the audio, and the idea is to produce, if I've understood it right, to produce a random GUID per enclosure, so per individual episode of a show, which is consistent for every listener, so that you can actually understand, therefore, exactly how many listeners you have, assuming that every single podcast app does this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, exactly.
Yep. And that's all the other, let's just say IAB based things stay the same. So you're still, saying, well, you need to download at least enough content to listen to the first minute and yeah. It counts as a new listen after 24 hours and those sorts of things, all this stuff, assuming all that stuff stays the same. This just solves the problem of differentiation with people being behind a NAT firewall and all these kinds of things, which is a real issue. I mean, here in my office, we have 100 people here, and probably 50% of them have iPhones, and a lot of them podcasts. So, Literally, it looks like it's all the same. It's all one big, one person downloading the same MP3 57 times. Mm. Do you think that's a thing that the Open Podcast Analytic Working Group could pick up and look at? Or,
I mean, I think anything that makes the job of analytics easier and better is a good plan. Mostly, analytics is driven by advertisers, not necessarily by podcasters. Because as Adam has already said, you're not that interested in your stats. You're more interested in everything else that you actually get back. So, in terms of that, do the advertisers care enough about this sort of thing is an interesting question. For me, I look at the IAB stuff and, I think that the IAB is good. I think it does a good job. It's quite slow. It's not fast enough for me. I'm a little bit disappointed at the fact that it costs so much to be involved. And then it's a bit sort of opaque, but I think it's a very useful thing to have a standard way of talking about a download and a play and a standard way of, of doing all of that. If this GUID helps, then I think that's great. I should probably also say, once more of our devices move over to IP version 6, then we've kind of got that GUID anyway, because we end up changing, or rather it changes that, because we end up changing IP addresses and all kinds of things.
There's still going to be a lot of NAT, though.
To IP version 6.
Yeah, there'll still be a lot of NAT, though, even with IPv6, because of the security issues with NAT.
There you go, you see.
IPv6, am I going to see that before I die? I've been hearing about this for 20 years.
You're going to get
it
your...
on my network here. I've got it on my mobile phone. I've got it on everything, I think. Yeah.
Oh, man, you want to talk about making logs a mess? Oh, Lord. Mm-hmm. IPv6. Oh,
yeah. Absolutely, it does.
You got 4 and 6 mixing together. It's like, it's all...
And the weird thing is that your phone, because of the privacy, your phone and your laptop and everything else changes its IP version 6. Address all the time. So it makes life really, really hard. But yeah, I mean, I think, I do my own stats for my podcast and for the Podnews podcast, which is the daily one. I do my own stats for that. And one of the things that I don't want to end up doing is to have any others, any unknowns. And I also don't want to go down the easy job of saying that all of these plays have come through Google Chrome or through Firefox.
Right.
Because that's not a platform. That's not a podcast platform. That's just the device that you're using at the end of the day.
The bottom line for me, and I think you realize this as well, James, and I've been out of the advertising game for a long time, but was a big part of it for most of my career. It doesn't really matter as long as there's an agreed to standard. And it's like Nielsen's, exactly. We all know it's total horse crap. Everybody knows, big secret. There are actually some ways to influence it. I think radio Arbitron ratings are even funnier the way those are put together. We used to have a promotion right around radio sweeps at WHTZ in New York because it's the Arbitron ratings, and Arbitron would send people a diary, and you'd have to list in your book if you had, you know, what radio stations you'd listen to, what time and for how long. Yeah. So we would run a promotion we would give away watches, the Armatron watch. So we would keep promoting this term. It sounds like Arbitron, but we were saying Armatron, and that would put into everybody's head, Arbitron. Have I ever heard that before? Oh, yeah, that's a book. Oh, yeah, Z100. And it worked. Clever. It worked.
Very
clever.
Wow.
It was a massive. Wow. We actually bought the watches. We wouldn't even take them for free.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's clever.
But as long as everyone agrees on the one standard, then you're golden. And I think that IAB, and of course, they also get to charge whatever they can charge, you know, for their lunches in Geneva. I mean, that's just how it works. So I'm super happy with that. For us, for the podcast index, I just love that we are an ad hoc working group of a bunch of nut jobs who all have an opinion, and sometimes we come up with stuff, and then, you know, look at the namespace. It's not like it's not Adam and Dave sitting in the corner. It's a whole bunch of people. It's years and years of work of thinking that's gone into it. We're just the wrecking crew. You know, we're in here. We're the snow piercer. We're the snow plow, and we're just, okay, we're just going to go. We have, I mean, except for some personal pride, nothing to lose.
The whole world is open to you when you are not scared of being wrong.
I'm not
scared of that at all. Yeah. If the worst thing that can happen is somebody says, you're an idiot, that was a stupid idea, and well, just drop it and go to the next one.
Right.
Yep.
So, James Cridlin.
It's a good place to be.
Man, thank you so much. We have to have you back again, because with you, we can get into some real deep philosophical stuff. So when we feel smart again, we'll have to get you on the show.
That'll be a while.
Be a while. And stop stealing our namespace segment, man. That really hurt. You're doing sexy namespace reads. Sexy namespace read.
We have no donations.
Thank you so much.
We have a couple of donations to take care of, if you don't mind hanging out for a moment, James. Yeah, this is a value for value. The whole project is value for value. So if you enjoy podcastindex.org, the API, that horribly racist, misogynistic search, you might use that from time to time. or any of the apps, you know, support those guys directly, of course. But if you maybe like this show, just what we're discussing, turn that value into numbers and go to podcastindex.org. At the bottom, the big red donate button, you hit that. That's all PayPal. We do have a Lightning Bitcoin payment there as well, which I think some people are using. I have seen some stuff come in. It's appreciated. That'll be for the future. And let's see if we had any. We had a great, great week last week. I mean, some massive support coming in. How are we doing this week, Dave?
It is a Monday, and we have zero donations.
Yahoo!
This is not Christmas. So we did have two subscriptions.
We got coal. Oh, we have subscriptions.
We had two subscription payments that came in my box, one for $5 and one for $10.
So, yeah, well, that keeps some fires aglow. Yeah. Yes, definitely. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm just going to wad up a random piece of paper because we have no. That's our coal.
Yeah, we'll probably have a double donation on next week's show because this, as you said, this is only a few days after the last one.
Usually the donations they usually come in like maybe Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah,
right before the show.
James, what you doing for Christmas, man? You must be weird there with the middle of the summer.
Yes, it's middle of the summer, which is very strange. So you have all of these songs going, "Let It Snow," and then you look outside the window and it's 90 degrees and you think, what on earth is going on? We are spending 4 days in a nice hotel somewhere, which should be
beautiful.
Which should be good. Yeah,
great.
It should be nice. In the hinterland of the Queensland bush. So that should be good.
Nice.
But so it should be good. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, congratulations on your tremendous success. It is the Bible to me for the daily read. I always go to my newsletters folder first and pick it out above anything else. And I actually load images, so I make sure you can track me because I want you to know that I'm reading your stuff. I don't do that on any other pod newsletter. It's not anything pod newsletters. And
thank you so much.
Yes, and I'd love to be featured one time to try and discourage people from using the term pod. I think that would be an excellent throwaway article. Oh, yeah, I have a real problem with this, James.
Oh, really? I was unaware of this. I've never said pod.
Good.
Other than obviously pod news.
no, just the idea of you're doing, we're doing the pod. It's the latest pod.
Yeah, we're doing a pod. That really drives me mad. Yes.
I'm
so pleased to hear it.
Yes,
so
I have pleased a friend. To hear it. I have a friend in this. Yes. Yes. Rock against the pod term.
Correct.
All right. Well, as we always like to ask, Dave, anything that we can do for you?
You can send donations so that I don't have to wad up a random piece of paper I found on my desk. That would be
fantastic. I want to thank Dreb Scott, who is diligently managing the chapters for all of our episodes. I have a feeling he'll put another sad puppy up for you, Dave, with the donations for today.
With a Santa Claus hat on?
If you want to experience the wonder of the... of the chapters in their full glory, newpodcastapps.com. A number of them support this, like Hypercatcher and Podfriend. James, what can we do for you?
You can get everybody who's listening to this to subscribe to podnews.net. It's a free newsletter. It's also a podcast, and it's at podnews.net.
Well, that'd
be great.
That's easy. Well, we can do that every single time. Not a problem. All right, man. Really, really appreciate it. It's been great, and appreciate the time and the scheduling because, as we said, you live in the future. So it's
well. Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be on. So
all right, Dave, my friend. Have a Merry Christmas. The rest of what's
you
left
too.
Of it, and we'll see all of you on the next episode of Podcasting 2.0 as we reshape the future of podcasting. Until then, take care, everybody. Bye bye. Should have muted my mic.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.